our insurance premium is set to triple or more than triple in the new year, and it's not affordable. Who has an extra $1,500 to just spend? And again, that's just the premium. It's also a $15,000 deductible. So it doesn't even kick in until we reach $15,000.
That's more than a mortgage payment. How are you supposed to afford health care? Anything could happen at any time. And you just have to figure out how to deal with that. Unfortunately for us, we're choosing to not have health care.
Well, that's not good. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. I got to tell you, after being overtaken, really, on yesterday's Bradcast by just a weekend of violent horrors from Syria to Australia to Brown University to back here in Los Angeles. Well, we've got a lot to catch up with on today's program that does not include violent horrors, mostly, though there are a few of those that we will get to as well, I think. But given that I suspect we have a lot of folks who listen to this program and also watch Rachel Maddow out there, who made a bit of a mistake in her coverage on Monday night, or was at least a bit misleading to a lot of folks, I want to try to correct her error somewhat, as it likely affects several million folks in about half a dozen states. Got a lot of other stuff to get to as well, including Desi Doyen and her Green News Report.
Yes.
A little bit later.
Yes, with a little bit of good news in there.
Really?
A little bit.
We'll see.
Yeah.
In any event, for right now, let's start here via NBC News Today. It's official, they write, House Speaker Mike Johnson says he will not call a vote to extend enhanced subsidies under the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare or ACA, effectively guaranteeing that they will expire at the end of this month. And with it, monthly premiums for more than 10 million Americans will likely go up, way up, will likely double or triple or more for as many as 24 million Americans who purchase their access to health care through insurance policies that are bought via the state ACA exchanges or the federal marketplace for residents of some states who do not run their own exchanges. Now, the cost for monthly premiums for most of those folks will almost certainly now go up as of January 1 because of this. For many, those costs will absolutely skyrocket, as you heard at the top of the program there. And neither Donald Trump nor most of his Republicans in Congress appear to give a damn about any of that after they slashed that premium, monthly premium assistance, along with Medicaid and along with Medicare over the summer, with the passage of their so-called One Big Beautiful Bill Act that, while cutting health care to tens of millions of Americans who need it, did manage to give $1 trillion in tax cuts to those who do not need it. Speaker Johnson made the announcement that he, at least, would not call for a vote to extend the expiring subsidies for the Affordable Care Act before year's end. on Tuesday after a closed-door Republican caucus meeting in the House, saying that GOP leadership failed to reach a deal with so-called centrist members of the Republican caucus to bring up an ACA amendment on a health care bill set for a vote on Wednesday. The Republicans, who have been pushing for an ACA funding extension, represent competitive districts that could make or break the Republican majority in the 2026 midterm. So you would think that the leadership of the Republican Party in the House would really want to make a deal here, but apparently not.
They're not going to even allow it onto the floor for a vote so people can vote up or down.
Well, they may have no choice but to allow it, but Mike Johnson is certainly not going to call for such a vote. At least that's what he made clear on Tuesday. Quote, "I am pissed for the American people," said Republican Rep. Mike Lawler of New York, charging, quote, "This is absolute BS, though he used the actual word, adding, "It's absurd. Everybody," he continued, "has a responsibility to serve their district, so to serve their constituents." He said, "You know what's funny? Three quarters of people on Obamacare are in states that Donald Trump won. So maybe, just maybe, everybody should look at this and say, how do we actually fix the healthcare system?" Well, Mr. Lawler, for one, you can fix it by continuing to fund it, you know, similarly to how you find ways without fail each and every year for decades to fund the fossil fuel industry or the military-industrial complex. You find a way to fund that all the time, don't you? Industries that kill people rather than the industries that help cure them from illness and disease and death. That's just one way that you can, at least for now, fix the healthcare system by not breaking a system that has actually been working, at least to allow access to healthcare for tens of millions of Americans, many of whom will now lose that access because of the actions that Republicans, including, yes, Lawler, you know, one of the supposed swing district, so-called moderate Republicans, Lawler, including him. Because, yes, he voted for the big, beautiful bill that ended up killing these subsidies. Lawler, of course, again, described as a centrist in many media reports, despite voting to slash trillions of dollars from healthcare earlier this year, while voting to give the wealthy and the huge corporations the lion's share of $1 trillion in tax cuts. Well, he faulted the leaders of both parties on this issue. Both parties.
Of course.
Both the party that is trying to ensure healthcare for Americans and the party that is taking that health care away. Both of them are to blame, right, Mr. Lawler? Asked about Lawler's criticism, Speaker Mike Johnson called him, quote, "a very dear friend and a close colleague of mine." But he said other Republicans come from different districts with different priorities and ideas where apparently they want people to die for lack of health care, I guess. Many Republicans, said Johnson, want the funds to expire on schedule. And so, short of a Christmas miracle at this point, they almost certainly now will, just as Jesus would have wanted. Am I right, Mike Johnson? Another reason the talks on Tuesday reportedly broke down is that GOP leaders told the so-called centrist Republicans, I think they're better described as desperate Republicans at this point, that they would need to find spending cuts in order to pay for an ACA funding extension, which is projected to cost about $35 billion a year. Oh, I know. They could take just $35 billion from the $1,000 billion, otherwise known as a trillion, that they just gave to rich people in the Republican-Trump tax cuts in the one big, beautiful bill. They could get $35 billion from that. Those, by the way, did not need to be paid for. In fact, those helped increase the national debt by $2.5 trillion over the next decade. Or they could take just a little tiny piece of the $170 billion they just gave to expand ICE to become larger than most militaries across the entire planet. They could get some money from that. That would help pay for it. But other than that, of course, the Republican Party, they're the party of fiscal responsibility, which opposes increasing the national debt and deficit, right? Other than that $2.5 trillion they just increased it by. Some Republicans who want to extend the subsidies have not ruled out signing onto a discharge petition by Democrats in order to end run Mike Johnson and force a vote on a simple, clean 3-year extension of the ACA subsidies. Well, that would be easy. Lawler said, quote, all options are on the table. Good. Put your money where your mouth is, Mike, and sign the Democrats' discharge petition if you actually want to help your constituents. It is pretty simple. Asked if he's open to signing the Democrats' discharge petition, Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania, another one of those endangered, desperate Republicans, said, quote, we'll talk about that after today. Okay, what are you waiting for, Brian? Christmas? The GOP divisions, reports NBC News, are likely to empower House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, who is insisting on a clean 3-year extension to the premium subsidies with the support of all Democrats. Said Jeffries on Monday, quote, there are 214 Democrats, that's all of them, in the House, who have signed a discharge petition that would force an up or down vote on extending the Affordable Care Act tax credits to make sure that tens of millions of Americans don't experience increased health insurance premiums that will prevent them from being able to go see a doctor when they need one. That was Jeffries on Monday. He added, quote, all we need are 4 House Republicans to join us. Well, Lawler and Fitzgerald, that's 2 of them right there. If the other endangered, desperate Republicans have consciences, well, they could simply sign that petition today and force a vote in the House before Christmas. As the birthday boy Jesus almost certainly would have advised. Now, NBC reports that even if a discharge petition were to secure the votes in order to pass, which is far from certain, it would take time to actually reach the House floor, that, they report, effectively guarantees now that it'll be pushed into next year, with Republicans hoping to adjourn after this week. Of course, they don't have to adjourn. Actual Christians would not do so, in my opinion. And, you know, they could also rest easier in doing the right thing in the House with the confidence that their Republican colleagues over in the Senate almost certainly will not, since 60 votes in the 100-seat Senate would be required to pass any such bill. And there are only 47 Democrats there right now, with only about 3 or 4 Republicans who might even consider doing the right thing, it seems, to help ensure the health and lives of their own constituents. So, you know, self-professed Christians like Speaker Mike Johnson in the House at Christmas, he could at least pretend that he gives a damn about helping his fellow human beings, and he wouldn't actually have to do it if they just let this bill go through. Now, I'm not Christian, but I do believe, apparently, unlike Mike Johnson, in helping my fellow human beings. So to that end, the correction that I promised regarding something that Rachel Maddow reported incorrectly or at least somewhat misleadingly on Monday night, she reported that the deadline for purchasing a policy through the Affordable Care Act exchanges was December 15th at midnight. So that would have been Monday night. And that the open enrollment period for buying a new policy via Obamacare for 2026 or for changing the current one that you might have, that would end as of midnight last night, that has ended. Now that, as it turns out, is not entirely true in several different ways. They're all a little bit confusing, but bear with me here. That is the case. The open enrollment period did end as of December 15th at midnight for healthcare plans that begin in January of 2026 in most but not all states. It is not the case in several of those states, including several of the largest states. And the open enrollment period in all states actually goes through at least January 15 for plans that might begin in February of next year. So you still have some time. Now, during his first term in office, Donald Trump actually did shorten the open enrollment period on the federal exchange to end as of December 15, and he is trying to do that again. But his current rule for that will not kick in until the end of 2026 regarding 2027's policy. So for the moment, the open enrollment period in all states is actually still open for new policies or changing ones that you may already have until January 15th, at least, of next year, even if that means in many states that your policy may not then take effect until February of next year. And while open enrollment for plans that actually begin in January may have now ended in many states, particularly those that do not run their own exchanges but force their residents to buy policies via the federal exchange instead, well, all states which run their own Obamacare marketplaces, other than Idaho, not available in Idaho, other than that, they all have open enrollment periods that actually go through the end of January next year, other than Idaho, which has a state-run exchange, but ends the open enrollment period on December 15th for all 2026 plans. All of the other state-run exchanges and the federal exchange are still open all the way up until the end of January, despite what Rachel Maddow might have told you last night. Well, actually, the open enrollment period in Massachusetts, that ends on January 23, but all of the other state-run exchanges are open for business until January 31 of next year, and even on the federal exchange until January 15 of next year, though you will not be able to begin your policy until February if you wait until after the new year begins to sign up for any of these. Got this so far?
It makes sense to me. Sounds like people have a lot more breathing room than they may have realized.
So they also have breathing room for January policies, but it is not too late for millions of Americans to actually get policies for January of 2026 or to change the ones that they currently have effective as of January. They can still do so right now through the end of the year in California, in New York, in New Jersey, in Rhode Island, and Washington, D.C., where open enrollment ends on January 31 of next year, but where you can still sign up for your January 2026 plan through the end of this year on December 31. You can go all the way to December 31 and still get your January plan. On her show last night, Maddow had suggested that the open enrollment period was ending as of midnight December 15. End of story. That's that. And while that is correct in a lot of states regarding plans that start in January, it's also incorrect in a lot of states, including a lot of big ones like California and New York and New Jersey. And actually, it's incorrect in almost all states regarding policies that begin in February, for which most states allow signups until the end, until mid-January on the federal exchange and until the end of January in California, New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and the District of Columbia. Now, I know that's stupid confusing, but hopefully it clarifies a little bit. You still have time. So I hope that helps at least some folks out there who may have been confused by what they heard, who may not currently have access to healthcare at all. It's not too late to sign up in really all of the states. Or folks who may not be able to afford their current plans in the next year, as Republicans have decided to double and triple the costs of those policies for more than 20 million Americans next year. So you still have time. You can still buy or change those plans for next year, even if the change in some of those cases will not take effect until February. And in those four states I mentioned, California, New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and the District of Columbia, you can still buy or adjust your plans for something that you may be better able to afford next year, beginning as soon as January. So you do not have to choose to go without health care coverage entirely next year, as that guy at the top of the show suggested. Thanks to the pretend Christians who now run the Republican Party in D.C. And yes, they really hope to make their lives easier by, you simply dying for lack of affordable health care. Should the entire Obamacare system be changed to something that is less confusing? Why, yes, of course it should.
Yes.
But that is not what we were talking about at the moment for tens of millions of Americans who are staring down the barrel of lost health care entirely as of the first of the year, thanks to Donald Trump and his Republican Party in Congress. So I hope that is helpful. And I hope you know about it, and I hope you can take advantage of it for yourself and your family, despite some confusing information that has been out there. And hey, speaking of Republicans killing people, the U.S. military conducted three more illegal strikes against three more alleged drug trafficking boats in the Eastern Pacific Ocean on Monday, unlawfully killing eight more people, according to U.S. Southern Command, bringing the total of those killed by the U.S. on unlawful orders of our deranged president up to now at least 95 people. Quote, on December 15, at the direction of Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, Joint Task Force Southern Spear conducted lethal kinetic strikes on three vessels operated by designated terrorist organizations in international waters. Southcom wrote on social media, adding, quote, intelligence confirmed that the vessels were transiting along known narco-trafficking routes in the Eastern Pacific and were engaged in narco-trafficking. None of which, it must be noted, makes any of it lawful, even if it is true, and they presented no evidence to support their announcement. It is none of it is lawful, not under U.S. law, not under international law. It is a lawless murder spree on the high seas that is being carried out by the United States in all of our names in the Eastern Pacific and the Caribbean near Venezuela. And it will continue because apparently there's nobody willing to stop it, including Republicans in Congress who could do so today. I mean, they're not busy passing health care reform, so maybe they could, you know, pass a resolution demanding that Donald Trump stop killing people in our name in a pretend war. But Donald Trump knows that these people are not going to do that in the Congress, and he could not give a damn in any event about the rule of law, especially about international law. As noted, at least 95 people have now been killed in strikes on suspected drug boats as part of this campaign dubbed Operation Southern Spear that the Trump administration has said is aimed at curtailing narcotics trafficking, which it is not, which even Trump's own chief of staff was revealed to have suggested in a story that I will try to get to in a bit. It is, in fact, a pressure campaign to force Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro to step down so that the U.S. can have better access to the largest known oil reserves on the planet, larger even than Saudi Arabia. The latest strikes come as questions about the Trump administration's offensive on the alleged drug boats continue to mount, notes CNN. The Trump administration has told Congress that the U.S. is in a, quote, armed conflict against drug cartels. An armed conflict, apparently, in which only one side is actually armed. The best type of conflict to have, I guess. That began, of course, with its with the U.S.'s first attack on September 2 this year, when the U.S. military carried out a wildly unlawful follow-up strike on the after the first one on a suspected drug vessel. After the initial strike did not kill everyone on board, an attack that follow-up strike was an attack on two shipwrecked victims. That is the very textbook definition, literally, in the case of the Department of Defense War Manual, the very textbook definition of an unlawful order and, yes, a war crime. If we were at war, which we are not. In these cases, it's just plain out-and-out murder by the Trump regime. They can't even hide behind the defense of war crimes. To help this fictitious war along, to make it seem like it's an actual war that our deranged president is somehow lawfully able to wage without a declaration from Congress or any actual armed adversaries actually shooting back at us. President Donald Trump on Monday signed an executive order classifying fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction, giving the U.S. government what Trump believes to be additional legal firepower in its pretend effort to combat illegal trafficking of the synthetic drug that, by the way, does not come out of Venezuela at all, but out of Mexico and its precursor drugs coming out of China, whose boats Donald Trump is not targeting in his high seas murder spree for some reason. The executive order signed on Monday cites the lethality of the drug, which actually does kill tens of thousands of Americans every year, and the fact that transnational criminal groups the Trump administration has ridiculously designated as foreign terrorist organizations use the sale of fentanyl to fund activities that undermine U.S. national security or something. Remember, he's making this up as he goes along. He's hoping to distract you from the Epstein files, which are supposed to be released in full before Christmas, and distract you from his own vile comments that he made following the murder of Rob Reiner on Sunday. Anything to distract you. None of it is legal, but he's betting that nobody is willing to stop him from any of this, which is probably a pretty good bet.
So far it is.
For now, yeah. Speaking in the Oval Office as he signed the order, Trump added that drug flows are, quote, a direct military threat to the United States of America, which, of course, they are not in any way, shape, or form, but, you know, truth and stuff. Venezuela, while seen as a hub for cocaine trafficking, Politico notes, is not viewed as a major contributor to the global fentanyl trafficking trade. The timing of the designation of fentanyl as a WMD is striking, observes Politico, as speculation mounts that the U.S. will carry out land strikes against alleged drug trafficking targets on Venezuelan soil as part of its pressure campaign against Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. Declaring fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction would, as the administration is pretending, give the U.S. additional legal justification to use military force against Venezuela, which does not produce fentanyl. All of which, of course, echoes claims that Iraq possessed WMDs back when the George W. Bush administration was seeking a legal justification for the invasion of that Middle Eastern country and the overthrow of its then-leader Saddam Hussein, a conflict that Trump, despite later claims, did not actually oppose, at least until it turned into a quagmire. Then you pretend, oh, I was against it all along. So if you're one of those MAGA folks who enjoys pretending that Trump is a peace president, that he opposes foreign wars like we had in Iraq and Afghanistan, well, yeah, you are being played for a fool yet again. You must enjoy it by now, however. The U.S. has also previously floated military strikes against Colombia and Mexico against drug cartels in both of those nations, and Politico reports that it has been expected that the U.S. will eventually turn its focus away from Venezuela and towards threats from groups in those countries so we can have wars everywhere. Why not? In the meantime, after Trump just last week, I believe it was, said that he had no problem whatsoever turning over the video of that second strike on those shipwrecked by the first U.S. attack on a supposed drug boat in the Caribbean way back on September 2, Donald Trump, said he would have no trouble releasing that. Well, and of course, he could order releasing that. He's the president of the United States, after all. But he pretended he didn't mind at all if it goes out. Well, Defense Secretary and former Fox News weekend host Pete Hegseth said on Tuesday to a gaggle of reporters that he will not be releasing that video, at least not to the public. That evidence of his own crimes, well, who can blame him? That video of those striking shipwrecked victims clinging to their lives and to the wreckage of their own boat before being mercilessly killed by that second strike with U.S. missiles that ended up killing them. Pete Hegseth will not release that video, he says, today, at least not to the general public.
In keeping with longstanding Department of War policy, Department of Defense policy, of course, we're not going to release a top secret, full unedited video of that to the general public.
Of course not.
No, of course not. Notice
top secret. They can't release that.
Except for all the other ones that they've already
released. Except for the dozens and dozens of other ones that they have already released. Somehow they were able to, I guess it's not top secret when the strikes actually kill the people.
The first time.
Yes. But if they kill them the second time while they're holding onto the boats, well, that would be top secret. Of course we can't release that. By the way, they released those dozens of other strikes on those boats on Twitter. So it's not exactly like it was a controlled release. They put them out on social media. But just not this one strike for some weird reason. Of course, we're not going to release it. All right, a bit more on those attacks and some other remarks, apparently in contradiction with the Trump administration itself by Donald Trump's own chief of staff today, plus some blowback from fellow Republicans about his remarks regarding the murder of Rob Reiner and Desi Doyen's latest Green News report. All of that still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Yes, it is.
All in all, you're just another brick in the wall.
Another brick in the wall. Another brick that may be falling out of the wall as Donald Trump's own White House chief of staff, Susie Wiles, essentially admitted that Trump's military attacks on supposed drug boats in the Caribbean is not actually about a war on drugs at all, but about regime change in Venezuela. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Trump's chief of staff, Susie Wiles, as CNN describes it today, delivered a series of unusually candid and at times unflattering assessments of President Donald Trump, of his second term agenda, and some of his closest allies in a series of wide-ranging interviews with Vanity Fair published Tuesday. Yes, another brick that maybe is falling out of this wall. Across more than 10 interviews, with this one guy, Wiles spoke frankly about working for Trump, saying the president, quote, has an alcoholic's personality. She acknowledged the president's appetite for revenge, conceded that many of his second-term actions were in fact driven by a desire for retribution, and suggested that Trump was pursuing regime change in Venezuela through his boat bombing campaign, contradicting official justifications for the strikes, which claimed it was nothing other than preventing drugs from getting to our shores and preventing supposed narco-terrorists from posing a national security threat to the country. None of which is true. It is all lies, and even Susie Wiles seemed to be admitting it today.
And it's nice to actually see it in print for once.
On Venezuela, she said the president, quote, wants to keep on blowing boats up until President Nicolas Maduro cries uncle. She acknowledged that Trump would need congressional authorization, in fact, to carry out strikes in Venezuela that he has been saying will come, quote, soon. Even though recently Trump said he didn't need congressional authorization to do anything because he pretends to be fighting an active military invasion, which he isn't, and now includes WMDs like fentanyl, which isn't. without denying any of her quotes in this piece by author Chris Whipple, who has written a seminal book about presidential chiefs of staff over the, years. Wiles claimed that her words, they were taken out of context somehow. So she actually said those things, but they were just, they were out of context. Trump regularly refers to Wiles, his top aide, as the, quote, most powerful woman in the world. Her low profile, however, you may have never even heard of Susie Wiles. Her low profile made her comments to Whipple all the more striking as the administration seems to be becoming more and more unglued by the day in a whole bunch of various ways. Wiles said Trump governs with, quote, a view that there's nothing he can't do, nothing, zero, nothing, unquote. And that is true. That is how he governs. And maybe there is not nothing that he can't do. Because who's going to stop him? In the interviews, Wiles notably admitted there, quote, may be an element of retribution in the prosecutions against Trump's political opponents. Oh, do you think? She said, quote, I mean, people could think it does look vindictive. She said in response to a question about the failed prosecution of former FBI Director James Comey, she says, I can't tell you why you shouldn't think that. When there's an opportunity, she said, he will go for it. When asked about the mortgage fraud accusations against New York Attorney General Letitia James, which were tossed out of court and then rejected by two subsequent grand juries thereafter, Wiles replied, quote, well, that might be the one retribution, just one. She also acknowledged that Trump did not have evidence to support his accusation that former President Bill Clinton actually visited the private island of convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Quote, there is no evidence, she said, of Clinton's alleged visits. When Vanity Fair asked whether there was anything incriminating about Clinton in the Epstein files, she reportedly added, quote, well, the president was wrong about that. She offered unflattering assessments of several of the president's closest allies in the interviews. Vice President J.D. Vance, she said he has, quote, been a conspiracy theorist for a decade, unquote. She suggested his evolution from Trump critic to loyal ally was, quote, sort of political. Oh, do you think? J.D. actually, you know, said that Trump might be America's Hitler. But now he's his vice president and his most loyal ally. Go figure. Sort of political. On tech billionaire and former Trump ally Elon Musk, Wiles said he is, quote, an avowed ketamine user. She said his actions to dismantle USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, left her, quote, aghast. It should. It should leave her aghast. And frankly, she should have left the administration at that point, since hundreds of thousands of children around the globe have reportedly died unnecessarily since USAID's operations were cut off by Musk, the world's richest man, with the approval of the Trump administration earlier this year. Trump administration, of course, including Susie Wiles. On Trump's attorney general, Pam Bondi, Wiles said, quote, she completely whiffed in her handling of the Epstein files. In another striking comment, Wiles described Russ Vogt, the co-author of the Project 2025 right-wing blueprint and now as the head of the Office of Management and Budget at the White House, as, quote, a right-wing absolute zealot, she called him. She also expressed policy reservations throughout the interviews on deportation. She said the administration needed to, quote, look harder to avoid mistakes. She said she urged Trump not to pardon the most violent rioters from January 6, 2021, advice that he ultimately ignored, and said that she unsuccessfully pushed him to delay announcing major tariffs amid what she described as a, quote, huge disagreement among his advisors. A huge disagreement about the tariffs that have been an absolute disaster. She also acknowledged she wants the president to focus more on the economy and less on Saudi Arabia. After the interviews published on Tuesday morning, White House aides Advisors and allies of Trump were reeling at some of the brutally honest assessments. Quote, it's in every group chat, one Trump ally told CNN, adding, everyone is shocked and confused. I bet. Yikes, a senior White House advisor said about the interview. Actually, the 10 interviews that were transposed here. The interview prompted intense speculation in Trump circles with one central question. Why would Wiles do this? Was she seeking revenge? Was she on her way out? At this point, nobody knows. And all of those people that she insulted, essentially, in her remarks have for some reason come to her defense. In fact, one advisor noted that Wiles, in her social media post describing her remarks as being taken out of context, she did not actually deny making any of those comments. Another said that every quote indeed sounded like her voice. It is apparently just another brick in the wall at this point as the Trump administration and its most loyalist MAGA backers slowly and sometimes not so slowly begin to crack apart as we head into another election year with a wildly unpopular president, an increasingly deranged president, with an economy that is faltering. Today, the Bureau of Labor Statistics announced that the unemployment rate is now at its worst rate, worse than it has been in some 15 years. At least if you don't count the last time that Trump was in office during the COVID pandemic. And as more and more elected Republicans appear at least to be somewhat turning on him, gently but turning on him in small and occasionally larger ways with each passing day, from his refusal to release the Epstein files to a whole bunch of them who seemed to distance themselves from Trump yet again following his appalling comments on Monday about the murder of Rob Reiner and his wife just hours earlier on the day before. You would think, after more than a decade of Trumpian loathsomeness, we Americans would be incapable of shock when President Trump does or says something despicable. And yet, on the morning of December 15, less than 24 hours after the horrific stabbing deaths of beloved Hollywood director Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle Singer Reiner, Trump found a new low, a subterranean low, as USA Today's excellent columnist Rex Hupke described it on Tuesday. A statement, he said, so vile, even MAGA loyalists seem repelled. Now, I still don't think I need to share Trump's remarks about this with you. You've probably heard them elsewhere by now. But essentially, Trump seemed to blame Rob Reiner for his own murder, essentially because, as Trump suggested, the legendary actor and director and avowed Democratic Party liberal activist was just too mean to Donald Trump over the years. So, of course, he deserved to die. And as Hupke writes, it reads like a narcissist's cackle, referring to the remarks that Trump made. He said it is a grotesque response from a depraved man whose boundless and wholly unearned sense of self-worth long ago crowded out any sense of decency. Many Trump loyalists, he notes, in MAGA seem to turn on Trump in response to those remarks. Former Trump attorney Jenna Ellis wrote, quote, the right uniformly condemned political and celebratory responses to Charlie Kirk's death. Now, mind you, there were no such responses from any elected Democratic official, at least to my knowledge, much less anyone as powerful or with such a large platform as the President of the United States. But sure, the right condemned people who were somehow celebrating on the left after Charlie Kirk was murdered, if there was anybody celebrating. Basically, it was people who were not sufficiently nice about Charlie Kirk after he died. And in fact, a Reuters report found that some 600 Americans were fired from their jobs for comments they made after Charlie Kirk's death and after J.D. Vance sent people out to go report such people to their employers. Anyway, Ellis continued condemning Trump by saying this is a horrible example from Trump and surprising, she says, considering the two attempts on his own life and should be condemned by everyone with any decency, which is, of course, why Donald Trump won't be condemning it. Meghan McCain said this is awful, cruel, and beneath President Trump. Not really. Jonathan Turley said absent is any sense of restraint in light of this tragedy or any consideration for this grieving family. Congressman, Republican Congressman Tom Massey of Kentucky wrote, quote, regardless of how you felt about Rob Reiner, this is inappropriate and disrespectful discourse about a man who was just brutally murdered. I guess my elected GOP colleagues, the VP, the White House staff will just ignore it because they're afraid. I challenge anyone to defend it, said Massey. Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene said this is a family tragedy. It is not about politics or political enemies. It's incredibly difficult and should be met with empathy, especially when it ends in murder. Right-wing commentator Rod Dreher wrote about Trump, quote, something is very, very wrong with this man. A father and mother were murdered by their son, most likely, and Trump makes it about himself. Yeah, well, that's what Trump does, isn't it? And that's what he did. And yes, they all condemned people who were not, you know, sufficiently nice about Charlie Kirk after Charlie Kirk was brutally murdered. But nobody said anything, as far as I know, certainly nobody in elected office said anything like what Donald Trump said about Rob Reiner. As Hupke wrote in USA Today, he said, I don't know what drives a man like Trump to call out hatred in others while routinely spouting hate. He said, I can't plumb the depths of his inner turmoil to tease out the driver of his unflagging spitefulness. But I do believe his impulse control has gotten worse. I believe he, on the whole, has gotten worse, crueler, more inflammatory, clinically devoted to revenge. Hupke says, we are a sick country with a person like Trump at the helm. Reiner knew that and wasn't afraid to speak out. Now, more people, even those who've devoted themselves to the president, are seeing that as well. Perhaps that's one small measure of good news, Hupke concludes, in this otherwise awful moment. If nothing else, I believe Reiner would want Americans to fully open their eyes. And I agree. I believe that Rob Reiner would. He'd want us screaming from the rooftops. And some of us are. Or are trying to. And maybe, maybe, hopefully, some eyes are being opened here in the bargain. Maybe we will see. But I continue to believe, piece by piece and brick by brick, I believe that the Trump wall is beginning to crumble. And we are seeing it before our very eyes. And it's hard to see while it's happening because it's sort of happening so slowly. And I do suspect, despite all of this falling apart, I do suspect it's only going to get worse in the days ahead as it does fall apart, as he acts out more and more, as he becomes crueler, more inflammatory, clinically devoted to revenge, as Hupke says. It's going to get worse. Both his administration falling apart and his vile, wicked, dangerous, vengeful, deranged responses to more and more failures as they come to light each and every day. And so it's not going to be easy. I'm not trying to say, oh, it's over for him. But I do continue to believe that we are going to come out of this madness. We will see a day beyond this madness, perhaps sooner rather than later. I don't know the way he's going, but we will see. All in all, just another brick in the wall. Falling out one after another until the whole damn wall comes tumbling down. Anyway, until then, quick break, and Desi Doyen is here with our latest Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman, and you're listening to the Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. Hey, Desi.
Yes?
Look, I made it.
You did.
I made it in time. I didn't run over.
And we didn't have to postpone the Green News Report.
No, but we still got time. We still got another one this week. I'm sure I'll screw it up later in the week. Don't you worry. Until then, let's get to it. Before we do screw it up, our latest Green News Report.
Next thing I know, it's already up 3 flights of stairs, and it's just coming. It won't stop. And we couldn't do anything. It was just a lost cause.
Torrential rains trigger historic flooding across western Washington state. Trump administration has rejected disaster aid requests from at least 12 states. Plus,
everybody's lived experience is the same. Traffic in Midtown is dramatically down.
New York City's congestion pricing program is also clearing the air.
So no wonder Trump is still fighting it. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We're canceling the EPA's absurd tailpipe emission standards.
Well, that makes sense. He'd want to change that. I mean, standing behind a tailpipe is how he applies his makeup.
So that's his secret. Stand behind it longer. This is your Green News Report.
Rev it up!
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, we warned a little bit about this last week, but this flooding emergency up in the Pacific Northwest is getting really scary.
Yes, it is. In western Washington state, on Monday, officials ordered immediate evacuations in 3 South Seattle suburbs when a levee failed, compromised by more than a week of relentless torrential rains from a string of atmospheric river storms, generating historic floods that overwhelmed the region's flood control infrastructure. At least one river shattered flood records, tens of thousands forced to evacuate, roads, bridges, and even parts of the interstate washed out. Big storms are not uncommon in the Pacific Northwest.
But not like this.
And the specific influence of climate change on this specific historic rain event will take scientists some time. But numerous studies have found that human-caused climate change has increased the severity and frequency of extreme rain events overall, including atmospheric rivers. Here's scientist Samantha Burgess of Europe's Climate Service on the BBC.
We're seeing storm tracks changing. So the historical trajectory of storms is changing. It's because of greenhouse gas emissions and concentrations in the atmosphere, yet we have the solutions available to change this trajectory.
Well, let's be sure to do nothing about it, shall we?
Multiple deadly flooding disasters across the country this year underscore scientists' warnings that the U.S. is not prepared for 21st century climate impacts. Donald Trump signed an emergency declaration for Washington state, enabling immediate emergency response support through FEMA. However, Trump has denied federal assistance, including long-term recovery and mitigation projects, for at least 12 states, often along party lines, like for California and Maryland. That's according to a recent analysis by the Center on Policy and Budget Priorities. The Trump administration is enacting the agenda outlined in Project 2025 of delaying or outright denying disaster funding, gutting hazard mitigation programs, and dismantling FEMA services to force states to bear the cost of disasters, even as climate change is causing them to become more frequent and severe.
The Project 2025 agenda that he said he didn't know anything about and didn't want anything to do with it?
Yep.
Oh.
But some good news on that front. A federal court in Massachusetts dealt a setback to the administration's efforts to weaken FEMA. A judge late last week, in a lawsuit brought by 22 states, ordered the administration to restore billions of dollars in canceled FEMA funding for a grant program that helps communities prepare for and respond to disasters, despite being fully funded by Congress.
Good.
In science, the deadly cluster of near simultaneous typhoons in late November that devastated South Asia, they were all supercharged by higher sea temperatures due to man-made global warming and were made worse by rapid deforestation. That's according to a new analysis by scientists with the World Weather Attribution Network. Warming oceans are also to blame behind the decision by state fisheries managers in New England to continue a shutdown of the region's commercial shrimp fishery for another 3 years. Scientists said that warming ocean temperatures have pushed cold water shrimp populations there too low to harvest sustainably. And finally, a bit of good news. In New York City, since the advent of congestion pricing that charges private vehicles to enter Manhattan below 60th Street, that program has led to a remarkable drop in air pollution.
Good.
The measure has made the streets less clogged in the city's congestion pricing zone, and the air is measurably cleaner. Particulate pollution in the air, those are teeny tiny particles that can lodge deep in the heart, lungs, and brain, causing illness and death. Particulate pollution is down by a full quarter.
We will take what we can get and wait for Donald Trump's challenge to the entire program to get to the Supreme Court.
Yep.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
These streets will make you feel brand new.
Thank you very much, Desiree.
Yes.
And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. You can share it with anyone you know, love, or hate there. And hey, while you're there, here at Year's End, actually, let me just say thanks. So there's been a number of you, more than usual, who have jumped in to help us out at Year's End with year-end giving. Please do keep us in mind. We are 100% listener-supported. We count on you to stay on your public airwaves, and we will continue to do so into the new year, so that we only have to rely on you. We don't have to be nice to anyone else. And as you know, I'm often not even nice to you. So thank you in advance. Hit one of those donate buttons at bradblog.com or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to help us keep doing what we do. Drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. On the social medias, you will find me, especially at Blue Sky, at The Brad Blog. I hope you will find and follow me there. And Desiree is also over at The Green News Report, over at Blue Sky as well, and the other socials.
Yes.
If you want to find her there, you are who?
Green News Report. Please come by and say hi. I'd love to hear from you.
She is really lonely, and you can tell her what it is you really think about me and the program and the bargain if you don't want to tell me directly. All right, that's it. We'll see you there at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Now you're in-